Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on December 10th, 2014. I'm our Ruler of Time, and with me, as always, of course, is Rolo T. Chris, how's it doing?
I'm doing well, Nick. I'm doing, like, on a scale from 1 to 10, let's put, like, a 6.58. Like, not quite a 7, but, you know, high enough that you definitely would feel safe estimating up to a 7.
Although that technically is a D, so...
Mm. Well... Yeah, but sometimes D's passing, so, you know. I don't,
depends on if you've got a pass-fail class or not, yeah.
I don't need straight A's through life, Nick. I just need to pass. And that's, you can quote me on that. I'm sure someone else has said it better than that and more eloquently, but I'm, you know, quote Rollo T on it. Hashtag philosopher. that's my calling card. All my quotes have hashtag philosopher at the end of it.
I don't know if I would, like, trust the wisdom of a philosopher whose wise sayings conclude with hashtag philosopher.
It's like fucking Plato. Every day lost is a day never gained. Hashtag philosophy. And people are like, suddenly I don't take Plato as fucking seriously as I used to.
Sun Tzu is like, if you know yourself and know your enemy, then you will never lose a single battle. Hashtag winning.
Hashtag battle.
Okay. So, speaking of battling, the manga that we decided to cover this week is something that I really kind of chose on a whim. It's Rock Lee's Springtime of Youth, which is a spin-off manga of Naruto, which we just got, you know, through talking about in great detail during Naruto-vember. So this is a little bit of a follow-up to that. It's December Rock Lee. I don't know. Does that work?
Rock-Lee-Sember?
That also works, yeah. Yeah. Either way.
All right, we're good.
So, basically, it's a gag manga with semi-chibi-ish versions of the cast of Naruto, with a great focus on Rock Lee's team, Rock Lee, Tenten, and Neji, and... However, it seems to involve almost the entire cast of Naruto. There's a ton of guest appearances, like characters that only show up for, like, one chapter. And it's just lots of gag manga jokes about the series taking place in the setting of Naruto, basically. Would you agree with that description?
Yeah, I mean, it's Naruto, but they take aspects of it. Almost moments that happen in it retell those kind of moments, and then they put a bunch of humor on it, and then usually every chapter ends with sort of like a lesson that's learned and has like a serious kind of learning development moment from it, and then ends on another wacky joke.
Mm-hmm. And at some points it's actually really weird to see like that stuff in the middle, because you get just little moments where obviously, you know, they're punctuated by a joke that really kills the mood, and it's really just more to set up a serious thing to then catch you off guard with the joke. But it's weird to see stuff like Tenten getting a character moment, because you had precisely zero of those in the entire series proper. And in this one, you know, her main function is to be the straight man of the group. Mm-hmm. And they make overt references to the fact that she is basically the straight man. And despite that, little bits of like the character's personalities from the original series do kind of seep through here and there. So it's kind of a weird thing, and it sort of exposes the fact that Naruto has this saying that a lot of people, I think, find more interesting than the series itself actually deals with, because there's so many characters that are all instantly recognizable for the most part.
Big cast, and for most of the time we were reading Naruto, you know, one of our big complaints was like, you have this huge cast, you're not doing anything with them. And then this series comes along, which is primarily comedy, but focuses on one of those, you know, groups of characters that didn't get a lot of focus, and, you know, almost every chapter is based on them, you know, and even though it's comedy, there's moments of development and whatnot between them. So it, you know, functions as almost this development, almost a side arc that was drawn to the series of just these characters and the small bits of development they get.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see, after Rock Lee basically disappeared entirely once the, you know, the time skip happened, it's nice to see him just interacting with people who are like, you have my respect, Rock Lee. Because it's like, oh my god, I can't believe how much I've missed just seeing that type of thing happen. It's nice to see, like, you know, Lee meeting up with Gaara or meeting up with Naruto and then be like, yeah, you're pretty cool, Rock Lee. When it's like, yeah, remember how basically Naruto considered Gaia one of his rivals back during the Chunin exam, and then he was just completely forgotten about?
He was like, whatever.
So, it's nice to see that difference, and it's basically a really, really well-done fan work, I guess you could say. But it kind of demonstrates that there was a lot that was sort of left undone that I think it is best left for people aside from Kishimoto himself to work with those ideas, because it would have been unfair to, I guess, ask him to include everything that gets thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, random bits where Rock Lee just, like, will imitate moves just by doing weird things with his body, let's just say.
A lot of toilet humor in this series as well.
Oh, the Thousand Years of Pain thing that Kakashi does, like, twice in the main series, that's, like, a recurring theme. Like, almost every character gets their own version of a Kancho technique. It's really weird. And there are tons of jokes about Rock Lee's eyebrows and how he, like, focuses the power he gains from the eight gates into his eyebrows to make them really long so he can do super moves with them. It's, yeah.
Now, a lot of people, when they would talk about this series, the thing they'd say is they're like, it features development for characters who never get any, and it's more development than what Naruto got, and some people were like, it's even better than what Naruto's been for the past few years. And to a certain extent, I can understand what they're saying. However, the thing people seem to say when they're doing this that I think they might miss, this series doesn't really have development of its own. It just takes development that happened for the most part in Naruto and just retells that story. You know, like, there's an early chapter where, you know, Rock Lee's like, oh, I can't use ninjutsu, so I'm going to do a whole chapter about me using fake ninjutsu to do that. But at the end, the lesson I learned is my dream in life is to be a strong ninja who only uses taijutsu, and that's that path I'm going to stick to. And you're like, well, that's something that happened in Naruto. And right. For a lot of this series, the lessons that are learned are things that we saw in development. You know, Neji learning to respect Lee is something we saw happen. You know, most of the stories are some that happened already within Naruto that are reinterpreted here. There are situations where that's not the case. Pretty much anything with Tenten is almost exclusive to this series, which, amusingly, even for a series that focuses on fucking Team Ten, Tenten still doesn't really do anything in this. She has, like, one chapter where she's, like, oh, I want to be, like, fucking Tsunade because she's awesome and she's my idol. And I was like, oh, okay, that's actually kind of a cool, you know, it gives motivation to this character beyond existing. And, you know, she gets kind of does something cool at the end of it. Like, one of the few times the big action moment at the end of a chapter isn't just supposed to be, like, fucking Rock Lee's butt in your face. And then after that, she just went back to doing nothing again for, like, 20 chapters.
It's like, okay, back to being the straight man.
Back to doing nothing.
And that's kind of one of those things, because a lot of the series focuses on bringing in tons and tons of other characters, just to have them show up and do a few jokes about them as well.
Mm-hmm.
The series seems to have the problem of there's only so many jokes you can tell with a single character who isn't Rock Lee, basically. Rock Lee, they seem to be okay with doing anything with,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, okay, well, this chapter features Naruto, so the sexy jutsu is going to come up, and Rock Lee's going to mimic the sexy jutsu by just putting a bikini on. And this one features Sakura, so it's going to be about Rock Lee being in love with Sakura. And this one features Inoshiko Cho's team, so Shikamaru's going to be lazy, and Choji's going to be a glutton. You know, it breaks a lot of the characters down to their most core archetypical personalities for the sake of making jokes. And so because of that, it's like, okay, how many jokes can we actually tell with, you know, Naruto, who is not really Naruto? just a guy who is sort of closer to his original character than the character he turned into by the point the series would actually take place in, essentially.
Yeah, I guess that's one thing we should actually mention real quick, is that this story takes place post-time skip, but not terribly far into the time skip.
And it's really flexible with where it takes place, because there are things that happen where certain characters should probably be dead, but they aren't. It was like, oh, shut up, I wanted them to show so I can make a joke.
Yeah,
like,
I'm here to be wacky.
So, like, Toby shows up at the same time as Sasori, for example, when Sasori was dead before Toby joined Akatsuki. But, yeah. And there's stuff like, they follow, like, Akatsuki around and just have them, like, goof off. Hidan gets off on torturing himself, and he's just basically made out to be a weirdo. Stuff like, oh, I don't know what else. Sakura punches Lee a lot.
Yeah, that happens.
That happens quite a lot. One of the things that I did appreciate was the fact that they actually show a bit more of Neji and Hinata's relationship post him beating her half to death.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, what happened after that? Well, apparently he became this really super protective cousin, older brother figure, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, that's nice than just saying, it's like, yeah, so what happened after he, you know, nearly beat her to death?
Well,
I don't fucking know.
I got over that. Fucking blood is stronger than water or something. I don't know.
And this one actually, like, addresses, like, Neji's like, yeah, I feel great shame about that, and so I want to make up for it by being, you know, as loyal to her as I possibly can. It's like, oh, that's nice. Would have been nice to have that one line in the series.
I'm pretty sure he gave her a look at some point that was like, I'm cool with you. He didn't say it, but that's what his eyes said.
Well, Naruto completely ignoring Hinata after she saved his life to go celebrate with everybody else was apparently, I love There's you, and I have a family later, so.
There's going to be a party later? Like, God, I fucking hate you, Naruto. Now, the thing that I liked about this series is that, you know, it has this wackiness, and then ultimately at the end of the chapter, though, it stops and says, hey, let's have a little bit of a dramatic moment, which is very key, because it helps ground the fact that Rock Lee is without a doubt the most annoying fucking asshole on the planet. Like, God, he is so stupid. He's so annoying. It's like Charlie Day, the manga. Like, you're just like, I can take you for so much, Rock Lee. And then I'm just like, you fucking stupid asshole. Why do people put up with you? Every day, something stupid you just did.
Just the way, like, he treats certain people, it's like, why haven't you caused war with the Land of the Sand if you're constantly bucking Gaara like this?
Why do people like you? Why does anyone hang out with you?
It turns out this is the real reason why Rock Lee doesn't get any focus in the post-time skip. It's because he's just an annoying fuck and no one would like him anymore. Because
everyone's like, God, you're such an annoying asshole. Go away.
I remember one bit. Where, like, I think that this was, like, something that was, like, anime filler exclusive, which was, I know that at one point in the manga, Team 10, like, encounters Kisame, and so Guy and Kisame have a big fight for a little bit, but before they, like, somehow break off from each other, and it's basically a draw. And the anime filler, like, expands on that by having them, like, suddenly encounter their own clones. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, these things know all of our techniques and are just as powerful as us. So Lee is like, the way to defeat them is for us to just get stronger than we were. No shit! Everyone's like, oh yeah!
I figured out how to beat the clones. We must not lose to them. Oh, wow! Wowie wowzers! You're the best, Lee. You're so smart. It's a fun series. In terms, especially, I think, of nostalgia, because they're constantly referencing things. They're constantly like, oh, hey, it's Gaara. Remember that time you fought against Gaara and you had that intense battle? And
I think my favorite recurring joke is whenever Sasuke shows up, Lee starts to launch into this, like, long flashback, and he's like, I'll never forget the day he banned Konoha. Some stuff happened, then he just bailed. That's, like, the whole story.
So, like, it's cool in that aspect of, like, getting to see those stories again and be like, oh, cool, and this is, like, a follow-up to that in, like, an amusing little way. But at the same time, I find that the series wasn't always as funny as I wanted it to be, if only because it goes for very predictable jokes. When it's unpredictable, or like the joke is you know, sharp and witty, it's great. But there's a lot of times where the joke is just like, check out my stinky underwear, and they'll fucking throw, or stinky tights, and they'll throw it in your face. You're just
and
like,
and then
okay.
Zenkin goes, what are you doing? That's just like 90% of her dialogue is just being, because there is a very popular comedic, two-man comedic trope in Japan, which I think is called manzai. And so there's one person who is the asshole and the other is the tsukomi, which is the straight man. And so it's like one person says something extraordinarily stupid, and so the other person is just like, oh, that was so stupid! And that's basically how it goes. And so, like, there are all these different panels where something ridiculous happens, and then off on the right side of the panel, you'll see this giant, jagged speech bubble with Tenten's shocked face in the corner of it, so you know it's her talking, and she's like, what are you doing? And seeing the type of humor that this manga as a whole comes up with, and seeing it over and over and over again, this does not hold up well to marathon readings.
No, and I think that's probably not the way it's best experienced. It probably is best as like a week-to-week sort of thing.
Or I think it's a bi-weekly series, or semi-weekly, I should say. So, but yeah, it's it will wear thin on you if you try and read a whole bunch of it at once. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there were times when you're just like, oh god, this is so stupid. It's not funny. And then despite that, something really, really, really stupid would happen, and I laughed in spite of that, so.
Yeah, there are, you know, very legitimately funny moments in this series, and I don't want to try to take that away from it by saying, like, oh, it's not funny. It is funny. It is actually very amusing. It's just there are points where, like, and particularly in, you know, a chapter-to-chapter basis where one joke will be used a whole bunch. Like, you mentioned the Kanpao whatever chapter.
Kancho, yeah.
Yeah, Kancho. The first time it's introduced, it's used, like, 6 times in the chapter. And you're just like, okay, I get it. They done stuck their fingers up somebody's butt, and it really hurt them.
Yeah. And there's, like, something where it's like one of them tries it, and the person pulls his pants down and reveals that he's got a steel plate shielding his asshole. But then they do something so that it breaks through the asshole shielding plate. And it's just, oh my, how many more times do you have to do this? It's like, until I run out of ideas, damn it.
Yeah, he's like, I got so many more fucking butt jokes, you blow your mind.
I got Kancho jokes and I got sexy Jutsu jokes. And I'm gonna keep on using all of them.
Yeah, you try to stop me.
Look, Rock Lee's wearing a bikini. That's not a real sexy Jutsu. Wah, wah. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah, also, the series obviously is not worth reading if you don't read Naruto.
Yeah, it's a series that has nostalgia, but does not stop to explain things if you don't get it initially. Like, if a character shows up, they'll kind of explain where their relations are, but then there are other times where you'd be like, Lee is a ninja who only uses taijutsu. What's taijutsu? Fuck you, read Naruto!
Oh, there are also a ton of bits that I found actually kind of endearing, which were just the blatant chilling throughout the series. It's like, why are you dressed that way? Oh, it's because this is how their counterpart in Road to Ninja was dressed, and now you can go and see it in theaters.
I think one of my favorite jokes, the first time Yamato shows up, the tree guy, and he like blends into, he's like, all right, everybody, let's hide, and he blends into the tree, and everyone's like, fucking, you act like all of us can do that. And then it's like his face in the tree, he's like, if you watch the anime, I'm in every episode, watch it and look.
And there's, like, the one where, like, they've got the game and everyone wants the game or something like that. And it's like, oh, and someone has come out to help us and you can use support just like this in the game. So, yeah, it's the kind of series where they can just do stuff like that when it'd be completely out of character in Naruto. And I feel like there are certain series that could benefit with the addition of more stuff like this. It's kind of like having a really long series of omake, the way that some other series do that. I think that it really is not, like, something that you should just read all in a row, maybe you could, like, break up your reading of Naruto by reading some of this in order to lighten the mood a little bit as you're sinking into Sasuke's eternal search or whatever. But, yeah, it's... And also, if you aren't sure you're going to get the sense of humor, read one chapter and you'll know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you could really just read one chapter of this, and it's, you know, a pretty short series, and then at that point you're like, oh, okay, I know to never touch this again, or I'm gonna have a lot of fun with this. Mm-hmm. Though note, you may also have a third opinion like me, which is, oh my god, why do people hang out with you? You're fucking annoying! But I really feel like that was just me reflecting that own question upon myself. Like, why do people like you?
Was there any character that you found yourself liking more than in regular Naruto?
I mean, Tenten was, you know, in the brief moment she has focus, she actually is a lot cooler. Like, the battle she has with Temari where, you know, she ripped this fucking tights apart to make a camisole. And I thought that was just supposed to be, like, a weird boob joke at first. But then it actually...
No, it actually is a weapon!
I mean, it still was a, you know, breast-related joke, but it actually had strategy behind it. I was like, oh, that's actually really clever of you. But outside of that, I'm trying to think of another character I liked more in this than... In the series, I guess I kind of like Neji just from the fact it takes all the edge out of him. Like, he's
yeah,
not cool.
And
he's
because, like, after that first arc is done, it's like, you don't need, I don't know, he's not a dark anti-hero anymore. We definitely don't need another one while Sasuke is out there ruining everything. So, yeah, having him sort of be serious but then somehow get caught up in Lee's antics as well, it's kind of funny.
He's just like this big dork by the end of it.
He really is. Also, I like that the puppets made giant robots. That was kind of random.
They do that, though. There's a lot of just like jokes you're just like, I don't even get where this comes... I don't even get where the basis of this is, but here we are. I enjoyed Rock Lee's Springtime of Youth, though, you know, for the most part. I don't think you're missing out on anything. I don't think you can say, like, I'm a huge fan of Naruto, but I've never read Springtime of Youth, and I'm just like, oh, objection! How dare you! But I feel like if you are a fan of Naruto, and you like humor, and you want a little bit more, or if you're just, you know, you have to be a fan of Naruto, I don't think you can get it otherwise. If you are a fan of Naruto, you like humor, and you're looking for something else kind of additional, I think this is a good pickup to read. And again, as you said, it's even maybe a good pickup if you're reading Naruto for the first time and you just need a break from all the seriousness of it and you just want to read a couple chapters. It works well for that.
Okay. So, I think that we're done with that. So, you want to move on to the recap?
Yes. Just a heads up for anyone who's listening, live or otherwise, there's going to be a special announcement regarding WMR at the end, as well as the contest for the World Trigger manga, and the reading of World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor at the end. So stick through.
Yeah. Or just come back later. Yeah,
yeah, or if you're fucking listening to this on the podcast, you can just
skip ahead. All right. So we'll start off with Bleach 608. Blacker Than Black, which for once was not actually an English title. It's, like, actually in Japanese on the page.
Nick?
Yes?
What's Blacker Than Black?
I don't know.
Ice Black.
I wasn't sure if you were going for that. I fairly felt like saying Ice Cold.
Yeah. I'm stupid.
All right. Anyway, so last time,
Shmetty.
Right. So Hyosabe unleashed the released form of his, I guess it was his Zanpakuto, and it's Ichimonji, and his brush has turned into a brush with a blade instead of a brush. And then he kind of swings it, and Jiwabak is looking at it going, oh, it turned into a blade. And then he sees it waver, and it turns back into a brush. And then it turns back. He's like, oh, what's going on? And so Hyosuke's like, oh, is it a brush or a blade? You can't tell which! So that seemed kind of pointless. Whatever.
He's like, that's what my Bankai does! Sometimes it's a brush, sometimes it's a sword. You'll never know which! I mean, can I cut it? Well, don't do that.
Then it won't be either. It'll just be broken.
And then it would be useless, and you'd be a rude little jerk.
So they start fighting with each other. Geopak is like, oh, what's going on? And he's like, all it's doing is splashing ink. It ain't cutting anything. Is it a blade that cuts names in half again? But you should already know I can restore the name and power you cut in half. And he's like, oh, you can't defeat me. Instead, my will. And then he stops for some reason because Yosuke goes, what's that? What's the name of that sword? Oh, you don't know, do you? Don't you know that that sword has no name? Because everything Ichimonji paints over loses its name. That without a name has no power. A sword without a name. A cross without a name. Did you actually think you could kill me with those things? So, instead of cutting the names of things in half, he's, like, I guess, covered them completely in ink. And because so much of, like, the power in Bleach comes from knowing the names of stuff, that's completely cut Jihabak off from that power. So, Jihabak says, fine, then I'll rob you of your power! And so he just, like, reaches out with his own raw power, summons this giant blast of energy, which he calls Sankt Alter, and tries to just rip Hyosuke's power out of him, but then it completely dissipates, and Ichibei is like, oh, don't be so surprised, because you did steal it, but the power you stole doesn't belong to you, because my power is black. Once I unleash Ichimonji, Soul Reapers, Quincy's, the dead, and the living, all the black in this world becomes mine. And, like, the blackness around Geobox's form suddenly, like, tears across his face or something like that, and that's the end of the chapter. So, this was weird.
Nick, what the fuck happened? What the fuck is his power?
It seems to be too full now, doesn't it? So, I understand the idea of, like, because before it's like, I cut your name in half, and so now it loses half of its power. I covered the name with ink, so it loses all of its power. It's like, alright, that sort of makes sense, sure. But, also, all of the black is mine, because ink. Well, isn't that just, like, a version of Shinsui's power? Because remember that?
He had the ability to cut color. It was just like, we have to pick a color, and that's the only color we can cut.
Right, and he's
like, what a stupid power.
And it's like, he also had two powers because he had two swords. Mm-hmm. And the other one was even stupider. don't step on shadows or else I kill you.
It's like, well, you're cheating now.
So, this is also a really weird one, and it's something that, I don't know, I think it's just something to make him look really powerful so he can then lose, basically.
Well, what I've heard, because I posed this question on Twitter, I was like, what is Ichimonji's power? Because I don't get it. And a lot of people were saying he has literal control over black, as in basically a meta control over this series of anything black he can then manipulate.
And considering how little shades of gray show up in Bleach.
He is pretty much an extreme. Like, oh, your coat's white? Well, I have everything else on you then.
What's that? Oh, you've got black pupils? Eh.
Yeah, it's... Man, it's going to be weird. I almost want to see the anime of Bleach Return, because I'm like, how the fuck do you animate this? He's like, I control all the black in the world, like the black on Urahara's green hat.
He just, like, twists the markings on people's clothing into different shapes.
Or you just see, like, this, like... Fucking, like, this human hand just come into the screen with a fucking Sharpie marker, just like, crickets, crickets, crickets! Now it's black. It's mine now!
It's so weird.
It's such a stupid power. I get kind of what he's going for. I just said, like, the covering things and making it so he can't use it. But it's just so weird and just, like, so arbitrary to what the, like, fucking universe would, like, what I imagine if you existed in this world and you could pick your power, what you would pick. Like, I feel like this is so much like, oh, I have to make a power. I want to make it something creative and wacky. And not like, oh yeah, obviously Ichimonji would pick the power to have control over all black and paint over things. It just seems so weird. Oh, but that's just me. I guess, yeah. You know, other people love it.
Let's move on to
God. You know what? For as bad as Bleach can possibly be, I am so glad this is the last fucking week we have to read E-Robot.
E-Robot Chapter 3.
I tried so hard this week, Nick. I tried so hard. I was like, I'm just going to read through it and like, just actually give it a fucking college try. And I got like 4 pages and I was like, this is the stupidest thing. And I just had to keep skipping through it because I was so annoyed.
Friendship. Effort. Victory. Okay. So here's what happens in this chapter. So, I finds porno mags under Yuki's bed. And she's like, how could you do this? And he's like, I swear they aren't mine. And she's like, I'm not mad that you have them because it's perfectly natural to jack off when you're a teenager. I'm upset that you kept them hidden. These need to be displayed proudly on your bookshelf.
TV. Why? You get it, Nick? Because she's all obsessed with porn, so she can't even possibly comprehend why that would be faux pas.
Yeah. So he's like, no, I'm telling you, I don't own those. They're not mine. She's like, I will use my ERO apparatus, aroma sense, which involves me crawling all over you in order to smell you in the creepiest way possible. And she used this to determine their true ownership. She's like, I guess they really weren't yours. And it turns out that they belong to Tanaka, who is Yuki's friend. But then Tanaka shows up at school the next day, and he's all beaten up, and all his porn's been stolen. And so they're like, oh, what happened? Oh, those rotten third years took them all. And then they come across Yuki's crush, and she hears them talking about getting pornography, and she's like, why are you talking about porn? Oh, Yuki, you're a pervert. And Yuki's like, no, I'm not a pervert. And then he explains the situation. She's like, oh, that's awful. Even if it is porn, you know, everyone has their own idea of what's truly valuable. Like my grandma gave me a teddy when I was little, and it was all beat up and dirty, but I still treasure it. And so Tanaka's like, yes, I have to go and get my porn back. And Yuki's like, no, I'll get them back. And he goes off with Ai and confronts these bullies, one of which has set up an amazing throne of boxes. Like, that's actually an impressive thing. What? How did you find the time in order to stack all those crates on top of each other to look that badass? You belong in another series, weird guy.
Also, I love in that scene, there's the dramatic wind sweeping up, but of course it's sweeping up just so Ai's skirt flies up to the point where you can see her butt cheeks.
Yeah.
Not enough that you'd see underwear, but it's like very much like, oh, it's not that like tantalizing just enough to like not see her butt. It's her butt cheeks.
Yeah, it's like she must be wearing a thong in order for you not to be seeing her underwear, basically. So, they're like, oh, it's that hot transfer student, Ai Roborovsky. And she's like, oh, they recognize me. I'm so embarrassed. And so they're like, who is that guy? Is that her boyfriend? No way. And so the main guy is Tsuyoshi Goda. And he's like, oh, you came here looking for somewhere private so you can make out, didn't you? No. No, listen, I want the porn mags you stole from my friend Tanaka. He's like, oh, well, you can forget about that because I want to keep all of those things, especially the mature mags. And he, like, rips his shirt off somehow. I'm not sure if he flexes or if he actually rips it off, but, like, his entire shirt and jacket just, like, evaporate off of him. It's like, that's kind of impressive, actually.
Nick, stop giving compliments to the series.
Well, I'm just complimenting this one guy. So, he tries to rush in and attack, and the guy just, like, dodges somehow. And the guy literally goes, these moves, they're like boobs! How can you move your entire body the way a boob moves?
I don't even get, like, why he'd say, like, oh, that move, that movement is just like breasts!
Yeah.
Because, oh god, why is it like breasts? Oh god, am I a character in some shameless garbage fan service series?
So, Ai goes, over these past 3 days, Mr. Yuki's worked around the clock in my special self-defense course. Float like boobs and sting like boobs. This manga is so fucking stupid.
You almost have to give them credit. Like, you really went
good
the extra
good
mile.
Job digging that far down. To new depths.
There was literally no pit you guys were not ready to go down.
It's like, I was like, I call it E-Robot Self-Defense Training. Boob foo. Boob foo, Chris. Boob foo.
And of course, the main character is doing the, you know, finger to hand, the fist to hand pose, but because her boobs are so big, she's just squeezing her boobs.
Yeah, they're in the way, so she can't, like, touch the hands together. So she's like, look at this cleavage that this Chinese dress that I'm only wearing for this one panel has a giant cleavage window, so you can look at my tits because you're 12 and you don't know how to use the fucking internet. So, yeah, like, Yuki has a flashback to remember why Tanaka is so important to him, and Tanaka's was like, okay. So Tanaka's like, you can come, so you're living on your own, you can check out all the dirty websites you want, I'm jealous. I'm Tanaka, can I come play at your house? And Yuki's like, sure, if you really want to, but we're not going on those websites, the law says you have to be 18 or older. And Tanaka's like, you're way too serious. So it's like, Tanaka wouldn't, see, Tanaka wouldn't need this series. Tanaka would just be like, no, I'm just going to ignore that and go where there isn't a net nanny or something.
Just end it, Nick. I feel like I'm fucking, like I'm Stringer Bell in The Wire, where I'm just staring down the gun like, just do it, motherfucker!
So,
just kill it!
So Yuki uses the ultimate technique of Boob Fu, which is Fist of the Knockers. Which seems like it should be a much better pun than it actually is. That needs some great rewording in order to actually be funny. Never mind, that can never be funny. So, yeah, he knocks out the guy, and he falls into a trance-like state of being in maternal love. I don't fucking know. They get the foreign collection back. They give it to his friend, and for some reason, the girl Yuki has a crush on comes over and is like, what this one says, the allure of older women. Well, I guess that you're not interested in me then. Awkwardness. She knew that that was Tanaka's collection. Why would she think that that was Yuki's?
I don't know. God, this series is so awful. I can't even comprehend how bad this is. Everything is just the most shameless, just garbage fan service jokes.
It's so stupid.
Like, it's almost reached that, like, sweet spot of being so bad it's good, but it falls just short of that to stay so bad I fucking hate it.
Yeah, it's in the valley in between the two. Like, in the far down depths of the valley. Yeah. Mm. It's like the Uncanny Valley, but, like, with quality instead of creepiness.
Like, I feel like there's quality here, but I know this is just an illusion.
All right. Let's move on to Fairy Tail.
I wish I could say Fairy Tail was going to be a whole much better, but it's not this week.
It's okay. We'll get better by the end of the recap.
Okay, so Fairy Tail chapter, I had to zoom in really close because the title's super... 412 Soaring in... something Ishtal, Ishgal. Yeah. All right, and the cover page is Natsu and Lucy and Happy sitting on a couch, and there's a giant dog hanging on Natsu's shoulder, which kind of looks creepy because that dog has to be fucking enormous.
Yeah, its eyes creep me out.
And Lucy, I'm not a woman. I don't know all of the
Lucy.
Ways.
Lucy is doing bedroom eyes. All right.
I don't know exactly, you know, every, you know, physic of how breasts work, but I can't help but look at that bikini top and be like, I feel like if your breasts were that large, you would never wear a bikini top like that because your breasts would constantly be exploding out of it.
It seems like that must be an actually very tight bikini for them to retain their shape like that.
Yeah, I was just
like, if you lie down, they don't do that.
Yeah, or even more than that, I'm just like, there's so much that's not being covered by them. I feel like, you know, you fucking just take a step and, like, you're bouncing out or something like that.
Also,
anyway.
Also, for some reason, she has a Band-Aid on her leg.
Oh, she hurt herself.
Aww.
I bet Happy did it. Looks like he has the knife right there with him. Like, he's flying yeah,
look at one. Look at that psychotic look in his eyes.
Froze agrees, Happy stabs! Alright, enough silliness. So, last week... Natsu and Gray teamed up together, and they defeated Marred Gear.
Like, apparently actually defeated him.
Yeah, he's done. Like, he falls to the ground, and he's, you know, battered. He isn't, you know, he's not moving or anything like that. So Gray picks up the book, and he's like, we're almost done, but we have to destroy this Book of Xerath. And Natsu's like, I promise that I would, you know, give the book to Egdil. And Gray's like, no! And the two of them are about to have, like, a face down. When all of a sudden, the ground starts shaking. They're like, oh, is it face? And they all see the clock says zero. And we basically cut back to where we were before, after Urza's fight. Face counters at zero. And all of a sudden, the face markers on the map start exploding. You know, going ching, 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 ching. Like, they're activating. And we see little explosions happening. For some reason, the explosion sound is goom. And goom, 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 goom. But, They comment to, like, oh, the face bombs are exploding now all over the continent. Now all the magic will vanish from the world. And Markrav even is like,
I love this moment so much.
He's like, oh, I guess I fucked up. It was too late.
I was too late. Can you imagine that? Like, because it cannot be easy to transport a giant crystal with a human inside of it. Can you imagine, like, tying that thing to the back of your truck and driving across the country, and then showing up and being like, oh, it's too late. I guess I better just turn around and not do anything.
I guess I'll just go home. On our next page, Lucy's butt says, whoa! Because that's just what the scene is. It's Lucy, from behind, looking at her butt in underwear. Because we are now in the most dramatic point of Fairy Tales history, and we need to see Lucy's butt. And
what's,
like,
amazing, what's amazing is that she's the one who keeps her clothes, and we see somehow more of her.
Yes. So she notices, like, oh, for some reason I feel weak. And then we cut to a few other members of Fairy Tail who are like, yeah, my speed's gone down. And, oh, I can't telekinetically touch anybody. And then we cut back to Lasana, who was in her animal soul form, and that suddenly runs out, and she's naked. And she's like, oh, no, I was using my animal soul for. And I just want to note, it's supposed to be the dramatic moment in Fairy Tale where we are led to believe that everyone on the continent is losing their magical power, and Fairy Tale has lost. This, they've completely failed. They will be killed because now all of them will be depowered and no one will be able to stop the demon invasion. But we did have to stop for a nudity joke.
And Lucy seems to be... What is that look on her face? Is she just shocked that Lissana's naked?
It's like Lucy's never fucking been aware
of
her.
Wait a minute.
There are boobs? Women also have boobs beyond me? Like, what are you so astounded by? You're naked 90% of the time, it feels like. God, it's such a stupid fucking chapter. So we cut away, and Wendy's like, oh, this feeling, and we see all these different places around the world.
If only I had kept my hair for this long so I could cut it dramatically now.
If only now I could cut my hair to show how miserable I am. Or I could get naked, which I guess is the other thing people are doing during this moment.
What if I cut my clothes? There we go.
And we see that all, you know, the magic trains are running off the trails, and, you know, the town's on fire, but they can't put it out. And Mardgear in his giant crater is just...
I feel like we should, like, get more moments like this. It's like one of those things where it's like, you know, people come up with the scenario of, like, what if all the power on the Earth suddenly cut out? You know, just disaster would happen because of all the stuff that's constantly in operation. And it's like, yeah, show like a magic plane crashing or something like that. Show just how much this actually is going to affect stuff instead of Lissana's naked.
Yeah, I was like, well, you don't have time for that, Nick. There's three other members of Fairy Tail's female cast to get naked. Suddenly, Urza's armor form disarms and she's naked too.
Yeah, they don't even show. Actually, yeah, what the fuck? Is this like favoritism against Lissana here?
Well, can you name a single other fucking reason beyond being Elfman and Lissana's, Elfman and Mira Jane's sister, that Lissana exists beyond another fetish fan service character? She's not even that awkward, somewhat of a Natsu fucking shipping character anymore, because they've completely dropped that.
Yeah, it's like they brought her back from the other dimension, and she was like, yeah, I guess I'm here now.
I guess I'll be another character to have in short shorts and fucking I'll fulfill your catgirl fetish.
Because Catgirl armor is just kind of beyond.
She has the power to apparently, like, summon the souls of other animals to take on their forms. Never fucking used a rhino, or fucking Wolverine, or fucking bear, or something intimidating. It's always like, kitty cat, meow meow!
Not even, like, fucking King of the Jungle Lion. It's like, cute kitty tiger!
I'm a little pet kitty! Rare, rare! Shock!
It's like, you could be defeated by, like, throwing a ball of yarn across your path.
Alright, so anyway. Shit's going around the continent, and Mardgear, in his big crater of losing, is like, this is merely the beginning. The elimination of magic will create null energy and revive, and stripped of their magic, the humans will be powerless to resist when the greatest demon in the Book of Xerath reawakens.
I like that reading of that. That's good, man.
I try. I didn't have a wacky voice for him, so I thought I'd play it.
Yeah, doing it straight was good. Yeah.
So everyone's like, fuck, we lost. And Natsu screams, damn it! And then all of a sudden, Actalagia slams into the ground, and Igno lands on top of him. He's like, humans, never give up! Never surrender! Or something like that. You know, that sort of speech. Then we cut away to the fucking perfume guy in the Blue Pegasus Guild, who are fucking farting their way through the sky nearby.
Still runs.
For whatever.
Not magic.
For whatever fucking. Well, they know it. They're like, we have a bigger problem. The ship's magical energy is decreasing. They're like, okay, I get it. All the magic in the continent is disappearing. Were these guys here to do something about that? No. Why were they here?
Oh, hey, look. Face. Oh, hey, look. It's dead.
Yes, and the next page, suddenly the face bomb they were near is shattered and explodes, and they're just like, face was destroyed by what, a bird? And we cut to the next page, and there's a two-page spread with a dragon that looks like a bird, and we see Wendy saying, Grandine? And then we cut to, all of a sudden, all face bombs across the continent are suddenly just disappearing, being X'd off, and, you know, Gazelle's even like, Metallicana, and we see a big metal dragon, you know, flying by and roaring as it smashes through a face bomb. And then, you know, Sting's like, oh, is, you know, I'm sensing wise Lugia. And, you know, Rogue's like, oh, Skyadrim's out there somewhere. And Igno screams, the dragons have been released, they're soaring through the skies of Ishgal. And we see in this two-page spread, you know, Grandine flying and the metal dragon, and presumably what are Rogue and Sting's dragons, that we don't get to actually see them as they're flying across the continent destroying face bombs. And, you know, everyone around the guild says, it's a miracle! And Natsu ends the chapter by being like, cool! And I'm like, great! You solved again your problem! Presented in one chapter, and you ended it in one chapter! Sweet! With dragons who just showed up! And you spent most of the chapter with fan service and the fucking stupid-ass Blue Pegasus guild no one gave a fuck about!
Deus Ex Dracula.
Like, it'd be okay if they hinted at this or something. It's just like, and the dragons are all back! Like, okay.
How?
Yeah, I thought most of them were dead or something. They're like, well, let's explain that later.
Because we didn't see them come out of Wendy and Gajeel and all those guys. They're just like, and they're flying through the skies. Solve the problem. It's okay, guys.
It could be okay if there was some kind of, like, pacing to this, but it's so weird. Like, two chapters ended with the dramatic moment of face 00, and like, oh, we didn't make it in time, but what does that mean? This week we find what it means. They really didn't do it. The face bombs are going off, but we spent most of the chapter with fan service jokes and stupid bullshit.
And a solution to the problem that was not hinted at, like, I imagine what may have happened was maybe Hero was like, okay, you know, I'll introduce this thing so that they can just have, you know, Mavis come in and save the day and stuff. But then somebody told him, like, you're just going to fucking do that again? He's like, oh, I guess I'll do something else that I hadn't been planning on doing.
I guess I'll bring back all the dragons all of a sudden. I mean, look, the one thing Hero is always, like, I always love about Hero is his fucking dragons look pimp as shit. Like, all the artwork for him looks cool. But it's just a moment where you're like, alright, so, you know, the heroes didn't really earn this victory because the dragons just kind of showed up out of nowhere to kind of pull them out of this. And then even the end of the chapters doesn't even feel that big because it just ends with fucking Natsu looking in the sky and being like, cool.
Fucking. Suddenly six.
Neato. That was weird cool. I'm like, shut. You fucking. You goddamn saved humanity. And you're just like, that was jolly good. Like, ugh.
I'm gonna go ride my skateboard now, and maybe one day I'll be one of the Power Rangers.
That was radical. That dragon blew up them bombs.
Anyway.
It's just, it's not the worst fucking case of, oh, we didn't explain that, but of course that's what happened in Jump this week, but it still just came off like a really weird chapter.
Yeah.
Alright. Let's move on.
Food Wars, Shokuyaki no Soma, Chapter 98, Things Accumulated. So, this chapter begins with the finals of the cooking tournaments underway. We start with our first page is like shots of the three finalists as kids, adorable children. One with terrifying circles under his eyes that imply that he's a murderer. Anyway.
But so, one of them is a fucking male model.
Oh my god, Akira looks so fucking pretty.
Fucking beautiful. I don't normally say this about 6-year-old children, but he is gorgeous.
Like his hair perfectly flowing with the wind. Oh god. So, Soma recalls this promise to his father after the last little cooking competition that they had, where he was like, "Yo, until the next time I beat you, don't go losing to anybody else." And so someone's like, "Yeah, time to go get it. I'm going to make the throne for best first year at Totoki Mine." And so the judges kind of converse with each other. Dojima realizes, hey, they're all just kind of like doing prep stuff. Nakiri's mother is like, I feel very excited right now because she's Danish.
I am so excited.
And then they have a thing where, like, what annoys me about the way that this is translated is suddenly Alice is a fucking valley girl. Like, this wasn't, there was no indication of this in the previous chapters, but she, you know, her mother says, watching handsome young men compete is yummy eye candy. And she's like, mother, you are like such a cougar. And as usual, you've picked up some weird vocab.
Like, totally, like, whatever.
Like, wait a minute, when did you start talking like that? So, they, all of the Nakiris basically are now sitting or standing at the judges' table. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. And the people are like, oh my god, there's so many of them in one place. And Chef Dojima's got some serious guts to sit with all of them like it's nothing. He's like, no, you just, like, whatever. They go around showing some of the stuff that they're doing. Soma is washing off all of the stuff that he had put on his pike beforehand. And everyone's really curious, including his opponents. And he's like, you know, if you're curious about it, you can just come and watch. And be like, shut up, I'm not watching. Fuck you. So he starts to prepare it. They have this, like, simile image, which is that Soma has pulled off a trick, which has really thrown Akira and Kurokiba off their game, which is indicated by a devil imp Soma showing up with the covered pike and waving in their faces and grossing them out.
I actually kind of like that. I like that, you know, they've been shitting on him so much, like, oh, well, have fun with third place. It's pretty good for you. And it's just this one moment to like, that he's fucking, he's doing something. He wouldn't just give up. What the fuck is this asshole playing? And just the little panel of him like,
I'll never tell!
Suck it!
So, basically the rest of the chapter focuses on Kurokiba, and so they're like, oh, what is he doing? He's got all these preparations of prawns and mussels and all that stuff. Oh, he's making aqua pizza! It's a local delicacy in southern Italy, and normally the pike is overwhelmed by the other ingredients, but because it's in season, it won't be drowned out. So he's got the perfect idea for this, basically. And then they have another joke between the Nakiris, because Irina refers to Leonora as her aunt, which is Obasan, which sounds similar to grandmother. And so she's like, oh, don't call me grandma! And she's like, no, they're completely different words. And, oh, she don't know the language. Then we get a flashback, which I believe is specifically from Alice's perspective. Basically, after the first time that she encountered Kurokiba, she went to Leonora and was like, I want to make him my aide. And so she was like, you got so many servants already. No, I want my personal aide, and I want him to be my age, too. Please, can I keep him? Please, please. And there's, like, this image of her, like, bringing a dog home in a box to her mother. And Kurokiba was like, what the fuck? No, I can't stand this bullshit. So, Alice basically is like, okay, you'll be my cooking aide, and you have to call me Miss Alice. No. Alright, if I beat you in a contest, then you'll have to be my new pet. okay, puppy? It's like, wow, that seems really sexual in hindsight. Like,
this got kind of kinky really quickly, actually.
Fanfic's gonna get rid about this, man. So, they had a cooking contest, and yes, Alice defeated Kurokiba, and in the most demeaning way possible, she's like, see? Now puppy says woof. They're like 12!
Didn't you have those games when you were 12, Nick? You lost and you made your friend pay you like a fucking animal?
Not while I had those eyes.
Yeah, while you were giving those alluring dominatrix eyes.
Oh, God. But yeah, apparently they had a bunch more competitions, and Alice kept on beating him until eventually Kurokiba managed to defeat her, and she got really upset about it, and she's like, okay, we'll keep on going. And so what this indicates to me is, because I think that Kurokiba actually said that he had won more of their personal competitions than she had, so this indicates that at some point he basically surpassed her and then just kept on getting better. Mm-hmm. So that's, I like that. And this really builds up the fact that, like I said, Kurokiba is kind of like the anti-hero in the middle, whereas Akira is the real antagonist of this particular fight. So yeah, he pulls out this heat-resistant film in order to finish his preparations. They're like, oh, that's like a food science technique. And it's like, yeah, he actually did pick up some stuff from working with Alice for years and years and years. And so apparently Kurokiba is also psychic, because he looks over to her and she thinks, don't you dare go losing now. And he says, you don't need to tell me twice. Psychic.
Fucking magic powers, yo.
So he's like, yeah, this film will be the key to my dish, and you better listen up, Hayama, because with this right here, I'm going to take you down. The only one winning this contest is me. Big badass blows the end of the chapter as he's preparing to cut the pike.
I actually like this chapter. I'm still trying to find the time to like work my way through and catch back up, but this chapter was actually really helpful for kind of understanding Ryu, and I only think by the point I stopped in the series, I even met Alice. So this chapter worked well to kind of establish their relationship, and I mean, I don't have much knowledge of what they were like before this, so there might even be more context to this that this would add upon, but it helped create a interesting and not complex, but unique kind of relationship between these two that I would like to kind of see explored further.
It is really weird because up until the tournament actually started, you really didn't get to see the, you know, combat mode of Kurokiba. He was just this quiet, dull kind of guy who followed Alice around because they wanted to focus on her at first. And so this has basically been his big step into the spotlight, his presence in the tournament. So, yeah, seeing the two of them play off each other as they do in the flashback is very different from what you've gotten before. So, yeah. It's cool. It's good stuff, though.
I dig it a lot. Series is has been excellent thus far, so I'm digging it a lot.
Gakuhote.
The Suzuki Murder and Dismemberment Case Part 2!
Dun, 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 dun. Dun? Dun?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun. Yeah. So, last time, there was a big cliffhanger about fucking Abaku was being a tease and was like, I'm going to spend the last two pages telling you that I know what's going on, but you have to tune in next time. It's like, you fucker, fine.
Dickhead!
Okay, I'll do it. To recap, last time, Tento Nanahoshi was accused of killing the fish, Suzuki, that the class had been raising because the class had voted not to eat it. His prosecutor in the case is Pine Hanzuki. His attorney is Abaku Inugami, our hero. And so we get a little bit of a recap in the first page going over the fact that things really don't look good for Tento because of the way the witness testimonies have been going. So Abaku calls a witness to the stand, and Pine objects because he's like, there was no prior notice of this witness. And the baby judge says, yeah, I didn't receive a petition to call witnesses either. So Abaku's like, let's not sweat the small stuff. And she's like, what the fuck?
To be fair, this is classic Phoenix Wright, where you're just like, well, why are you allowing us to do that? And then she basically gives him the reason for why they're doing it. Like, he's obviously guilty, so there's no possible way this fucking witness could change anything about the course, or the case, so I guess we might as well just let him in. Who cares?
So, Abaku,
the defense should have some defense.
So Abaku says, Those things do indeed prove that Tento committed a crime that day, but Tento isn't the perpetrator. Well, that's real convenient, isn't it? Yes, our witness has arrived, though it's not accurate. It's not a testifying person. It's Suzuki the fish, who Tento carries in a big fish tank. And Bayan says, "Objection! A fish can't talk!"
I called it last week, Nick, too. I said the fish was still alive.
I fucking love that line. "Objection! A fish can't talk!"
Oh, boy.
So everyone's like, "Oh my god, it's Suzuki!" And Bayan's like, "Yeah, even if it is Suzuki, wait a minute, Suzuki!" And there's just, like, this big caption that comes up. "Defense witness one, Suzuki." Just, like, a close-up of the fish's stupid-looking face.
Yeah. The fish is so fucking happy with life.
"I'm a fish. Yup." So.
Now's the time for the big dramatic explanation, Nick.
Right. So, Pine says, "If this is the real Suzuki, then what was it that was found dismembered?" And Amoku says, "That was an ordinary sea bass that Tento purchased from the seafood section of a supermarket. By the way, the tank wire was likely dark and murky because he'd had the soy sauce that came with it. In short, to put it dramatically, this case involved a body-swapping trick." He, like, switches his hands around to demonstrate body swap. Well, he basically says, like, you know, no one was going to perform a fucking DNA examination on a goddamn fish. So he drew the star mark on the fake Suzuki's face, dumped it in the tank, carried Suzuki away, and dumped it in the pool, which apparently does not fill it with chlorine.
Yeah, I was like, I'm glad there's no chemicals in the pool that would just kill that fucking fish. Yeah. It fucking floats up, and he's like, "Oh, well, guys, I didn't kill the fish originally. Then I accidentally did, for realsies."
So one of the girls is like, "Oh, so the ghost of Suzuki that I saw in the pool was really the real Suzuki. This time of year, the pool water is murky, so it's an ideal hiding place. Also, the aquarium tank labyrinth was likely wet not due to a curse, but because Tento used it to move Suzuki." And so he goes back to his big Thanatosis thing, and he says, "Tento, also facing a certain dread, feigned death." Well, actually, he launched a fake murder operation. But, you know, it's the same thing.
Really. It's obviously Thanatosis.
So, he says, like, you know, it would just be a difficult distinction between them because of the soy sauce-stained water. And so the judge is like, "Indeed, I can see the defense's assertions. However, why did the accused carry out such a complex action?" And Tento pulls out a note saying, "Warning, I know about your betrayal that day. If you don't want to be exposed tomorrow after school, kill Suzuki and cut him up into pieces." And so it's like, "Yes, it's a warning letter." "Oh, but there are so many misspellings on it." And this, like, tomorrow is like T-O-M-R.
It starts off okay, like, "Oh, they spelled, you know, betrayal wrong." It's like, you know what, I could screw up betrayal. Then it gets like, "I'll see you after school, S-C-K-O-O-L. I was like,
"It's K."
How the fuck do you misspell school by putting the same two sounding consonants in there? Like, I understand S-K-O-O-L, but how do you put the C and the K in there?
Abaku explains, "That day."
But how are sometimes the K right way, and then the other times they're the wrong way? You put it backwards.
So Abaku's like, "That day, Inugami had already figured it all out." Or rather, Tento's like, "Oh, that's what he did. He figured it all out when he saw the ladybug. He knew it back then." And so Abaku's like, "See, you know, ladybugs do this out of instinct, but Tento, you can still fly, can't you?" And Tento says, "You know, I didn't really have many friends, and Suzuki was my only conversation partner at school.
And when the light shines on my head, I look like a ladybug." As if we didn't make the similarities between me and that ladybug evident enough.
"So, I intended to vote to not eat it, but then one day, Uozumi's group of boys approached me saying, 'Won't you consider voting eat with us, Nanahoshi?' They ate lunch with me, we walked home together, we gave each other reach arounds. I was honestly in heaven." Wait, what was that third thing? "Honestly in heaven." Okay.
Popsicles.
"And on the day of the vote, I still switched sides and ended up voting not to eat. And that's why the boys lost by one vote. And then I got the note saying that they knew about my betrayal. I'm sorry, everyone! When I saw the threatening letter and thought I exposed as a traitor, I was afraid of going back to being all alone, and I freaked out. That's why I went along with the threat and faked Suzuki's death. And so everyone's like, oh, we're so sorry that you felt that way. We're so sorry we ostracized you. So Pine's like, fuck, this isn't going well for me.
Well, she's like, sucks.
All right. Oh, I know. Don't you think it's odd that that vote that day was taken under super strict conditions, right? So no one could have discovered the accused betrayal, right? And so they're like, oh, that's it. Perhaps the accused himself fabricated that intimidation letter. And Abaka's like, aha, that's why you're such a green pineapple. You've already partially answered your own question. Like looming over her and screaming in her face.
I don't, what is the green pineapple line?
I don't fucking...
I was like, what's that a reference to?
Well, her name is Pine. Would a green pineapple be super raw?
I guess. I don't know what
pineapples look like. I don't know if pineapples grow.
All right, Nick. So how did they do this case? How did this all come about, Nick?
Wait, what?
How did this come about?
Oh, you want me to dramatically read this?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I got the full details of the voting circumstances from Tenso. I want you all to recall it, too. There was one fishy thing about that day. And it was like, fishy thing? God, right now. And so, he recalls when the teacher distributed all the partition screens and stuff. And so, one of the students is like, oh, everything was supposed to be proper, but something felt off. We kept on being told not to look around, but we didn't notice it then. Or rather, we weren't supposed to notice because it involved the one person we aren't allowed to question. Not even at the teacher's face were we supposed to look. And she's got this fucking horrifying expression on her face. Just like stalking around the classroom with her eyes bulged down, her tongue hanging out of her mouth like, eh. Like, what the fuck was she doing? And all the students are like, teacher was watching us! And so the teacher's like, freaking out. I was like, oh, no, hold on, no, come on, you can't name me the perp just based on that. And they're like, I was only patrolling to make sure that no one would hand in a blank ballot.
Objection!
Taking a tally after collection ought to have been sufficient. I bet someone snooped on Anahoshi writing in his note.
Objection!
Yourself are the one who testified that no one could possibly see each other's ballots, teacher. But besides, that intimidation letter is bizarre. It's full of misspellings. I mean, warning is spelled with a U instead of an A. I'm an educator. If I were the perpetrator, I wouldn't make such a dim-witted mistake. Huh? It doesn't say a U in warning. And the reason is because this is the real intimidation letter. I copied it while making different mistakes. So if you aren't the perpetrator, how in the world did you know that this word was misspelled? This series is fucking awesome. I fucking love this manga. So the teacher's explanation is that the whole point of raising an animal is so that you can eventually eat it. And so she was dead set on ensuring that they would eat it. And she just has this complete meltdown. She's like, no, I'm not wrong to have done this. The loss of that preciously nurtured life, that's the whole point of Shokuiku, the eating. And then her tongue sticks out and her jaw unhinges as she continues to freak out. It'd just be a pet if we didn't eat it. In which case, I'd have just selected a much cuter bunny rabbit or something. And yet you naively optimistic innocent started wanting, poor thing, sob and moan, moan, wah, wah, wah.
Oh, man.
But Abaka chews her out, saying, it's like, you know, both the eat and don't eat factions debate each angle this whole past month and experience pain. And that time spent together, conferring the same hurt and anguish is what's important. It's not your place to decide the outcome. That's up to the classroom session! And then...
Dun, dun! Ah, and they fucking drop confetti in it like Phoenix Wright.
And the baby judge is like, I pronounce the accused Tenta Nanahoshi innocent! And for taking advantage of your student's weakness and instigating a criminal act, I send you, homeroom teacher Akane Akimoto, to 100 laps of hand washing the hall floors.
Aw. It's not as dramatic when in Phoenix Wright pretty much all of them get the death sentence or fucking life in prison, but... I guess the really murder of this was someone cut up a fish.
Yeah. So, the students who pressured Tenta before, like... we're sorry. We're sorry that we pressured you that way. We didn't realize what we were doing. And so Tento celebrates with his new friends and is happy and he's crying with joy. The power, I learned a lot of things from that, from Inugami. The power of Ranpa and the importance of not being afraid to state one's feelings. And we didn't know it yet at the time, but a continuation of that bloody classroom session was about to begin in our class.
Dun 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 dun.
And the teacher is washing the floors.
What'd you think of the series, of the chapter?
I love this fucking two-chapter story. It's so great. It's so amazingly absurd.
I love this series. Even if I was, like, mediocre on the series, I like this series. But I love it so much for Weekly Manga Recap, solely because while you're recapping it, I just get to play different Phoenix Wright music in the background.
It's got such great hammy dialogue. It really does evoke the Phoenix Wright games in that way.
And it has, like, that big thing you need, too, where the villain at the end just has a complete fucking meltdown. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, it'll never make sense in Phoenix Wright or this, or maybe the Japanese court system works differently. But every time it always ends with, like, oh, hey, your client's innocent, and we found the real killer, so we'll sentence them here despite the fact all you needed to do is prove your guy was innocent. And then this would be a separate court case, but they always just do it in one. But I love it in that it has that feeling, too. Like, we didn't get... And this is the first case, so I'm not expecting, like, some long build-up to, like, who's the real villain of this? But I really did enjoy this, and I hope this is something that gets to stick around. Mm-hmm. Because this is one that I think will be fun in Weekly Manga Recap going forward.
Yeah. Vote for this series. Vote highly for this series in the polls if you have a subscription, seriously.
There you go. Now I have to close all my Phoenix Wright tabs.
All right.
Well, let's really quick do High Fly Custer.
I don't know what happened. I don't think I actually read it.
I read it, and I can
chapter 13. Don't think you've won just yet.
So Kandara and their car escaped the damage, and the driver of the other car is like, "Oh well, no. Good luck to you, hoity-toity." And Kandara's like, "All right, take the wheel. I'm gonna get on the car, and I'm gonna fire slashes at his car, and you know, uses his slash ability to attack the other car, but it just dodges nimbly." And that's when Peta's like, "I could see his fucking hi-fi label. He has Ludwig von Beethoven's hi-fi, the ability of absolute space perception. He can see objects' vibration as an image and can perceive their spatiality in that way. He's using
minute.
That Beethoven ability was... to drive like that."
Wait a minute, Beethoven was deaf.
Yes, well, that's their notion, is like, because of one sense being gone, he was really good at writing music, so this guy has no disability and he's really good at driving cars. I don't know, Nick. I don't know. They don't always make sense.
Okay.
So the other two members of the squad try to, you know, use their powers to slow him down, but it's not really having any effect. But they're like, it was just a distraction because our real ace in the hole is Peta, that Special Unit 6's secret weapon. So Peta gets to the car and he reaches in to grab the girl. And he grabs her arm and she's like, "Oh!" And he's like, "Don't worry, I'm here to rescue you." And she starts to cry. And then Peta's like, "Oh, fuck me!" And that's because he sees her signature and he's like, "Oh, she has file number Alfred Nobel!" And that's when fucking Mimi's like, "Alfred Nobel, that's the hi-fi of the Swedish inventor of dynamite! Its ability is to blow things up!"
What?
And that's how the chapter ends.
Oh, gosh. I'm so glad this could
another be power I would have introduced a lot earlier if you needed to, rather than fucking Beethoven's. Oh boy. Alright.
I want to talk about Nisekoi really quickly.
Okay.
The only one reason I want to talk about this is because, like, oh, it's the start of the next school trip arc, like, for this school year for them. It's chapter 150 groups. So instead of, like, getting to pick and choose their own groups as they're going to Kyoto, and everyone's like, all the girls with a crush on Raku are like, I have to take him to this one particular shrine of love, which has a miraculous 90% success rate if you bring them there and do something. So then our love will be guaranteed forever. And, like, Chitoge and Onodera and Marika are all thinking about this at the same time. And they're all like, oh, we've got to do this. But then it turns out that their groups are being decided by lottery. and so all of the main group of characters end up in the same group, except Raku. Who ends up in a group of all guys, and they're like, ha! Your luck's finally run out, asshole! You're stuck with all guys! Fuck you!
Suck it!
Which is kind of a beautiful reaction. And they're just all got the stupidest fucking looks on their face, like, you're with all guys too, you assholes. Yeah, but we're always losers anyway. But I think this sort of system is, like, amazingly cruel. You would think that, like, Raku would just be like, look, all of my friends, literally all of my friends are in that group over there. Can't I just join them? Like, no.
No, we did a lottery.
Look, the groups were unbalanced last time, so deciding them completely by random will fix that problem. What the fuck? But then it turns out the next day, Raku has to, like, help this old woman do a bunch of stuff, so he's late to get on the bullet train to Kyoto, and it turns out that Onodera is also late, so they've got to, like, take a cab together in order to catch up with the rest of the group.
Wonder if they're going to have a moment that maybe hints that the two of them have feelings for one another, but doesn't actually progress forward in their relationship.
Because Raku's going to have to end up together with Chitoke anyway, because that's how these series always end.
And, one true pairing. Duh. Did you know I'm a really big fucking Chitoge Raku shipper?
I did not know that about you, no.
Yeah, it really fucking... Kitora really just opened up the door for me to just suddenly become...
Gotta a ship everybody! Every character I see, gotta ship them!
I ship fucking Chitoge with Raku, I ship Nami and Sanji, and I ship fucking Koko and fucking Komatsu.
Who do you ship Soma with?
Who's the big... boobed girl.
Which one?
Arena. What's her name? Fucking snooty bitch girl.
Alright. The big boobed girl.
It's probably not her name, but...
The big boobed girl in the fan service series.
It's just one, right, Nick?
It's two characters, I guess.
Yeah, I wanted to eliminate the two fucking flat-chested fetish characters in the series and then work from there. Don't you get it, Nick? I was doing fucking Guess Who with you. I want you to just flip down the thing.
Does your character have big tits?
Like, no. Clack, clack. Well, that didn't help much. I've got 20 more of these to go through. Is your character sexual? Right. Fucking goddamn it. So
bad news for those of you who didn't know about it already. There was no One Piece this week.
That was a pretty big bummer to me.
Yeah. So was there Seven Deadly Sins, though?
Yes, there was Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 107. Seek the truth. So, last week, we introduced an arbitrary and frustrating power system. And this week, we continue to use it nonstop. And I swear to God, the fucking pig uses it on everybody. The other two people who challenged Melodius, he's like, oh, combat class 1690, combat class 1710. And then they proceed to go through, giving the combat class of all of the seven deadly sins who are there. So, Gowther's 31,000. Not 31,000. 3,100, sorry. Diane is 3,250. And just to note, Merlin told Hawk that he was 3,000. So now he's like, oh, fuck, all these people are stronger than me. And Merlin is combat class 4,710, which I think actually was more than Melodius was last week. Let me just check that real quick. I can't remember offhand. I thought he was, like, 3,000. Yeah, that's actually a lot higher than what Melodius is. So, supposedly, Merlin's fucking much stronger than all of them. Didn't see that one coming. But, the only thing that's really funny about this is that because Hawk still thinks he's 3,000, as he walks around judging other people, he's like, oh, Gil Thunder was only 1970. What a loser. Like, he's just fucking judgmental to everyone else. He's just like, oh, I'm not the weirdo. All the other members are just really, really strong. These guys suck, though. But there is one shot that shows that Diane, underneath that really impractical skirt, actually is wearing shorts, so it's not as impractical as I first thought. But we see that, what's his name, Howitzer, I believe, is talking about what happened essentially with Dreyfus, and the fact that Dreyfus, in the end, turned good, but at the same time, he was responsible for killing several members of the Holy Knights. And he's conflicted about that. He's like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? How am I supposed to feel? And Merlin comes in and says, it seems paradoxical, you know, the Chief Holy Knight's actions. But when things are consistent with each other, you must try seeing everything as the opposite. Once you assign meaning to seemingly unnatural actions, a completely different answer comes to light. Sincerity becomes malice. Reality becomes foe. Meaning comes to meaningless. What are you talking about? Think about it. Then you'll find your own answer. If people stop thinking, they're done for. I'm like, thanks. I don't know what you said, but thanks. So they're stopping their, you know, Guild Thunder, I think, is like, all right, well, let's look into this and see if we can find out more and, you know, decide for ourselves what we think of Dreyfus. Let's go to Chief Holy Knight Dreyfus's quarters. And then we cut away to the Seven Deadly Sins, you know, minus Bond and King, who are still outside in the Fairy King Forest. And the rest of the members are inside the King's chambers. And they're talking about, like, this big danger. But the thing that I find funniest is, like, during the conversation, you just see Hawk in the corner. He's like, the King's combat class is only 5:30. Pathetic. I was like, what a douchey little fuck. He's just judging everyone the entire time. But the chapter ends with the king saying there's a big darkness in the world and it's coming from the kingdom to the south. A massive threat is closing in on its capital of Camelot. And that's where the chapter ends. And the chapter is funny for the sake of Hawk being such a fucking prick, but it continues to push this stupid fucking power level system that is just awful. So, kind of a mixed bag there. I can't stand power leveling, or power gauge systems, really. I feel like it does more damage to the world than it helps.
Alright, let's move on to Toriko, Gourmet 304, Seed of Courage. So, I like the little info page on the online jump version of this chapter, because the only character listed is Sunny. It's like, yeah, all the other guys are dead, remember? It's just Sunny's terrified face.
Remember? They're all dead, right? You believe it, right? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Only Sunny's left.
It was like, previously in Sunny and the Monkey King Adventures.
Previously in Sunny getting his ass back to the fucking real world. Fuck cooking. Oh my god, I'll eat fucking nothing. I'll drink water and eat fucking rice bread. I don't even care.
Bye, Komatsu.
Yeah, later. Bye. Good luck with things, whatever you do.
So, the weird monkey that had, like, a sword for a tail thing shows up, and it's got, like, an umbrella on its tail instead, and it, like, comes over to Sunny, and it's like, ook, and it points, ook. And so Sunny looks over, and it's Zebra's head, but then it starts dissolving into poison. He's like, they were poison dolls, all of them! Except for Toriko's arm, that one's real.
That one's real, because he can just regrow that back now.
He's like, okay, Toriko actually might be dead. So he's like, alright, that means there's a chance everyone's still alive. So let's see if I can take in Coco's deadly poison with Satan hair. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'll do it anyway. And then he's, like, following the monkey around. The monkey leads him over to Coco. He gives Coco back his poison. The monkey leads them around. He's like, oh, I see electromagnetic waves from Toriko and Zebra on the west. Rest. They go over. There's, like, narration that's like, their hearts were blanketed in fear and despair and sunken in darkness. They were striving to unearth the tiniest little seed of courage. Would it have been better to have died? Such a thought had flitted through their minds because the battle had pulverized their pride, confidence, and self-respect. Really, that guy just, like, shit all over them and then teabagged them for good measure. Oh, it's so humiliating. They suck. And they find Toriko wrapped up in, like, the blue demon's arm. As protection, I guess. But it's the wrong arm, I note.
Really?
He got his right arm chopped off, and that is clearly a left hand that's wrapped around him.
It is.
Like, just look at the placement of the thumbs on the two, and you can tell right arm got replaced by a left arm for some reason. So, yeah. Anyway, they're like, well, shit, that sucked. And then Kaka says, food luck. That's the only thing I can call it. Down to the rival of that monkey.
I wish I could rewrite this scene. Bullshit. That's all I could call it.
It was complete bullshit.
Obviously it was bullshit.
So Toriko's like, what happened? And Kaga says, what happened was not a battle. It was a game. The Monkey King was playing the whole time. Okay, I'm just going to read this entire explanation as Kaga explains it. It's going to take a while, but I want to impress upon you that this is just a quick summation of what the Monkey King did with ridiculous explanations for every single one. So, Kaga says, he played hide-and-seek first. The reason his eyes were closed was because when you first saw him was because he was it. And then when he screamed, that was him yelling, ready or not, here I come. Then when the zebra came to attack him, he took it to mean the look over there follow-up to Rock, Paper, Scissors. Japanese people play weird games sometimes, man. And then when he did that, he pointed to zebra's left, but the blast of wind from the direction his finger pointed made zebra's head spin around dozens of times before it snapped off. So, fortunately, that was actually a poison doll. How that got replaced, I don't fucking know.
Well, no, Nick, they fucking explain it in this chapter.
Yeah, I spoke about making dolls right before the incident, so good job I did that.
With no foreshadowing in previous chapters, this was done. God!
Then the Monkey King played a practical joke by kicking the back of your knees, Coco. And with Torko, he was arm wrestling. And then after that, he saw Sunny Blink and figured Sunny must be it in hide-and-seek now. So he fled to the mountains to hide. But I'd already released Sundorico Pollen just before the Mountain King hid. So he sneezed once, blowing everyone away. And that was the blast of air that changed the landscape. And the moment the Choo-Choo Chopper saw the Monkey King, it dove in around. It was like, fuck this noise. And so Kamatsu's fine.
So... in a fucking, in a, what was described as a .01 blink, all of the others died. There's enough time for the choo-choo chomper to get underground safely. A choo-choo chomper that's like 8 miles long of fucking train.
Well, it was the moment the choo-choo chomper saw the Monkey King at all. So they, remember, they still had like a few seconds where they were like preparing. So I guess in the time the Monkey King was like...
So at the same time the train's going underwater, that's the moment that Coco's like, hey, poison dolls, everybody, poison dolls, okay, cool. And they just nod, he like thumbs up to everybody.
Should we tell Sunny that this is our plan? Nah, fuck him.
Fuck that asshole.
His stupid fucking hair.
He Irish eggs at my party last week, I'm not fucking helping that guy out.
So Torika's like, so you mean... we weren't even cut out to be his playmates. And Kaga says, well, that's one of the eight kings for you. Just like the one horse you encountered that nearly killed you, Toriko, when it breathed on you and you nearly died. Making this entire thing a wake-up call that you didn't need because you'd already had it.
Alright. So, well, you're not technically done with the chapter yet.
Right. And basically, they're like, oh, the reason why the Monkey King is, like, trying to do all this stuff, why he taught the other monkeys monkey martial arts, is because he's trying to make them strong enough so that he'll have playmates so he won't be bored. Which is kind of an endearing quality. I think, yeah. I like the Monkey King himself, but just this entire psych, no, nothing really bad happened, and here's stuff that you couldn't possibly have known as is the reason for why they're fine. And then Kaka's like, so, are you really going to face the Monkey King? And then Yun comes out and is freaking out because Komatsu's, like, dying again. So they're like, oh, we've got to stabilize him again. And he's like, oh, right, Komatsu, you must be hungry. I bet you want to stuff your face. I'm sorry. I'm sorry our hearts kneeled before the power of the Monkey King. We're going to get back up and not be defeated. I swear we'll eat pear together. And we're going to start doing monkey martial arts training. And... we'll use this type
stuff
to be the thing that always gets us fired up. You know, our appetites. So, we gotta do, like, another power-up. Again. Because Toriko got his ass kicked. Again. After not accomplishing anything in between the last time he got his ass kicked.
Well, remember, they fought the Gorilla Taurus, which was...
fuck that!
A pretty crazy big deal, Nick.
Oh, Toriko is so bad right now.
It's astonishing how bad it's been recently. I don't hate this chapter in premise. I actually think it can work in premise of, like, this chance they met, you know, they've gotten stronger since they met one of the Eight Kings. They were preparing to go fight him. He meets them, you know, before they were ready and, you know, puts them in a place where, like, they really have to reevaluate themselves. That in itself could be, you know, a fine development or whatever, even if it is, you know, a little bit of fucking, hey, we just kind of went through this and we still haven't really resolved it. But I can still get that. But the explanation is just that most frustrating level of bullshit. of, they were all poison dolls. Well, when did you make them? I just knew to make them. Well, how did you make them for everyone else? Oh, I talked about making poison dolls for everyone else just ahead of time.
What about Sunny?
Shut up.
What about Sunny? I can only maintain two, remember? Yes.
Sunny will close his eyes for a hot second, and that'll, you know, we'll stay safe for that reason, or something like that. It's just,
look,
it's frustrating because...
regenerate, and Zebra keeps on throwing himself into shit, and I'm going to be one of the poison dolls, so fuck you.
Yeah, suck my nuts, Toriko. It's frustrating because there's no way you could even, like, have really expected that. Like, you could have, in the thousand explanation, like, yeah, maybe they're poison dolls or something like that. But it's just so frustrating that Toriko has done this trick so frequently of, holy fuck, everyone looks like they're dead. And then every time it's a new explanation. Ultimate routine.
Poison dolls.
Pure water.
Toriko's demon transformation thing.
Like, there's always something, and it's just frustrating to constantly get it time and time again, and it's just a new explanation every time. And it really just makes Toriko show itself off as a very substantial, like, fucking... It's completely without substance. There's nothing. All it is just flashy, look, everyone's dead, but they're not. So let's continue the story.
Yeah.
And it is mind-numbingly annoying at this point.
It's like they're Darwin of the X-Men. They just, like, find ways to not die.
And
they can't do shit otherwise.
And there's no tension to it anymore, because this has happened, like... Alright, we're about 2 years... Or, sorry, not 2 years. About 2 weeks off from doing the weekly manga recap. That's going to be, like, our year-end recap. And I want to actually see, within that year, how many times Toriko has had a fake-out death. Because I feel like within this past year, we've had at least 3 instances.
It's ridiculous.
And it's not as though... in between that has been a substantial amount of story and growth or anything like that. It's just always been transitioned to that next death scene or something like that. There's just nothing in Toriko right now that's substantial and worth reading.
Let's move on to an actual good chapter.
Yeah. There was one this week.
Yeah. World Trigger, we can always count on you. Thank you. Chapter 86, Tamakoma 2. So we begin actually with a little bit of a flashback. With Shinoda. I think it's not Shinoda. Who is that guy? The guy who looks like Maze Hughes.
They name him later on in the chapter, but I don't know.
Right.
I thought it was Shinoda.
I thought Shinoda was...
Rindo and Shinoda are the two directors that were not involved. So it's either Rindo or Shinoda.
Okay, one of the two. So he is like, alright, I want to promote Chika to B-rank, so we're going to take the points award to Osamu and Yuma and transfer them over to Chika. And someone's like, you can do that? Well, no, not usually, because that would be cheating. But this is an exception, because people up top are arguing that Chika should be able to bail out when necessary. Mainly Mr. Kinuda. I love this little, like, Chika's like, oh yeah, that guy who was like...
a doting father.
This little thought bubble coming out of her head.
And you know, it's silly, but it actually is, one, a really good explanation of like, hey... she has a ridiculous amount of power, and we're totally fine with fudging the system to make it so that she has the ability to bail out when needed. Yeah. But
because
I also like that they gave it...
the main target of our fucking enemies, so maybe...
But I also like that they gave it, like, the override explanation, too, and, like... And also, Mr. Kanuto dotes the fuck on her, so she gets free privilege.
So, yeah, they're like, yeah, you know, gotta protect that value. Yuma, that means losing your bonus points, so you have to earn your way back up to B rank. He's like, that's fine.
I had bonus points?
They're like, Osamu, you okay with that too? Yes. I was basically fighting with her trying anyway. It's like, oh, so humble, Osamu. So, yeah. And he's like, rank war started at the beginning of February. That's when you'll unveil the B rank Tamakoma's 2 squad. And Osamu's like looking at them and like, and he's like, well, your uniforms aren't here yet. It's like, whatever.
that sounds exciting to me. I like that little tease of, like, the uniforms didn't make it in time. Oh, well, we'll save it for next week when we can all wear them. I don't know why. Maybe this
be all badass looking at
maybe this is more of the fangirl in me from this series, but I'm like, oh, God, they're going to have coordinated outfits, Nick!
I hope that they're, like, the X-Men and stuff.
What if their colors sync? But still
we're
have individual...
It's all black and white.
But all have elements of individuality to them. Well, you can tell as it is right now, Osamu's got gray, Yuba's got black, and Chika's got white.
Yeah.
Let's keep that color scheme going.
So, Mikimo, after he, like, wishes Yuma and Chika good luck, he's confronted by Commander Kido, who's like, by the way, congrats on forming your squad. Are you all set with your injuries? Yeah, I'm fine. I'll be able to participate in the rank wars. And then he says, by the way, that press conference, now that you're healed, is there anything you'd like to say about it? Nope. Bye.
Later.
No, he says, I understand it was another way to fight, but if you try the same kind of thing on Cougar Ashika, I will never forgive you.
I love it's a moment of Osamu, like, being kind of a badass, but even then, he still comes off like a fucking pusshole, because it's not even like, I will make you pay. It was like, I won't ever forgive you!
His eyebrows don't even look that mad, because yeah, he's got the glasses on.
He's like, if you do something mean again, I won't like you at all, mister.
I seriously hope this is not the voice you're using for your fan degree.
I'll be surly cross with you, sir.
So Kido says, good luck, work hard, and fulfill your goals. And then we cut into the border war, ranking wars thing. And we meet our main commentator, I guess, Sakuraku Taketomi. That's a fucking fun name to say. I didn't even realize that.
Sakuraku Taketomi.
Yeah. I like her greeting too. Evening, border folks! And she, I love that this intro that she gives for Satori, which is, we're joined by, did you see my double barrel sniping? Satori from Arashiyama Squad.
I like that he's the announcer, when I'm like, isn't his whole gimmick is that he tries to do things that are cool and no one pays attention to him?
Well, yeah, I guess they just block out all of his color commentary.
They're just like, what? Oh, we had a third fucking host, I forgot. Also, he's like, didn't you hear my awesome analysis?
It's like, also, Captain Mikimo from Tamakuma 2 is here. Today is the first day that they're B-ranking. He's like, hi, attention.
Oh, boy. Oh, I think my team will... They'll be just jolly. Gee, Welliker is great.
You need to stop that. So, Satori runs down, alright, so B-rank is divided into three groups, top, middle, and bottom, and there are 21 teams right now, so 7 each. So we do 3 or 4 team battles within groups, it's a free-for-all, in which every team is scrambling to earn points. You get a point for defeating someone in a different squad, and you get 2 points for surviving to the end, and that's it! And you earn your points in order to work your way up, and so on and so forth. There's also handicap for the people who did well last season, they're ranked higher, and that's about it. So, the battle begins, Yuma, I love this a little bit, where Taketori is like, you know, your team's at a numbers disadvantage against Yoshizato and Mamiya squads, so what do you say about that, Captain Mikimo? And he's like, eh, they'll be fine. Yuma just cuts the guy's head off in the next panel.
Like three people right in a row.
The slaughters them. And they're like, oh my god, he's so fast! Yoshizato's squad was annihilated already! And they're forced to bail out. What is Mamiya squad going to do? And so they're all like, he beat Midorikawa, so we shouldn't go head-to-head. Let's just, you know, hide in here, be inside a building so he can't get at us. And so Satori's like, they'll collectively fire upon anyone who tries to close in. Ah, I see! Everyone on Mamiya squad is a shooter, so their simultaneous full-on attack, Houndstorm, will be super powerful if it connects. So this is gonna be tricky. And then Usami, from her operating desk, is just like, hey, Chika, can you shoot that building? She shoots it, and the entire house blows up. This is like, you know, Chika's, like, first chance to actually be badass by herself in an actual fight. So, I like how she's just like, yeah, okay, kaboom!
Suck it!
So she just blows the whole house up, the team goes flying, and Yuma finishes them all off in midair, and they win in, like, a minute. And they're like, oh my god, Sniper Agent Amatori demolished the whole building with her Ibis! Is she allowed to be that powerful? And they're like, oh my god, they're so tough! And they jumped up to 10th, 12th place with just this one battle! And they're like, oh, their next opponents are gonna be Arafune Squad and Suo Squad, who are people we've actually seen before! Yay!
So have we seen the first... I knew the second squad, but I don't remember. Oh, they're the all-sniper squad. That's right.
Right. So they're like, yeah, we'll be watching these new B-rank stars as they battle again next time. Don't miss it on ESPN 8. Something like that.
ESPN Trigger.
So it's a very simple chapter, but I like it. Also, Chica's snipe friend still has the cat with her.
Well, duh.
It's like, not even rescuing the cat anymore. It's just there for her.
It's just her fucking friend now, Nick. God damn it.
It's like our fucking familiar.
At first, I wasn't crazy on this chapter, because it's like, they got through that easily. And then I was like, yeah, fucking of course they did. They're supposed to be way stronger than, like, low B ranks from the very beginning. So it actually made sense for their first fight to be a complete fucking walkthrough. And at this point, this is supposed to be kind of a way for us to be like, hey, these characters are really awesome. And they won't be challenged, because we know that there are stronger opponents ahead of them. So this was just a chance to be like, hey, look how fucking cool Yuma and Chica are.
Right, because, I mean, Yuma, of course, it wouldn't have been too big a deal for him to take out a bunch of people, but at the same time, it's like, hey, remember what he was doing last time when he, you know, had to basically throw himself completely at his opponent and nearly suicide in order to beat him? Well, this is what he does with the, like, low-level entry people. Gotta reestablish that. Also, Chica gets to do something! Yay!
Chica's a fucking cannon. She's not even a sniper. She's just a cannon that aims at things. Do you need precision? No, not when I destroy half the block.
Alright. So that's it for the recap. So, time for special stuff.
Yes, alright. So, let me get the special announcement out of the way. So, I had said last week that I had a special announcement regarding weekly manga recap, and I didn't want to, you know, give anything out about it, because I wanted to save it for everything to be ready. And then, of course, in typical weekly manga recap fashion, shit falls apart at the last minute, and this announcement's going to kind of come off more like a wet fart than anything else. But just bear with me and listen to what I'm saying, because it'll make more sense. But the initial explanation's going to sound lame. Weekly manga recap will be coming to iTunes very soon. And I know when people hear very soon, they're like, oh, yes, just like you were going to read fucking Shigeki no Kyojin very soon. I'm like, well, look, I'll get to that. No, when I talk about getting it on iTunes, I mean, I'm working very hard to get it on iTunes right now. And I thought I had everything ready, but unfortunately, at the last minute, I've been having technical issues. The site I've been using, I uploaded everything on there. I've been spending the better part of about a month now working on it, getting all the episodes, because, of course, right before this would happen, my computer goes down. So The 2 years worth of weekly manga recap that I had saved on there was gone. So I had to re-download all of that and then reconvert all those FLVs from Blip into MP3s to start uploading that shit. So I was going through the process of that. I found a site. It's the same site Nick uses for his Internet Wrestling Chronicles. I've been working.
It's not what it's called, but whatever.
Or Integra Wrestling Chronicles, sorry. I've been working diligently.
But the joke is, Chris.
I've been working diligently to get the episodes on there, and I finished it this weekend, had it all done, everything up to Kingdoms. I got the link, put it into iTunes, and it's giving me an error, like your feed does not have byte range requests enabled. Enable them before submitting again. And I was like, okay.
Requests.
I don't know what that is, but I will search for it. And I didn't have any luck, so I was like, okay, well, contact Podcast Garden. Podcast Garden has a support feature and literally nothing else. I sent in a ticket. They responded. Didn't help, so I asked for more clarification. They haven't responded in about a week, and I'm just fucked otherwise. They have no phone number, no email address, no social media presence whatsoever that I can even reach out to. I'm basically at this point just waiting for them to respond, hoping they have an answer for my problem, because their response didn't even sound like they were listening to what I said. So if they can't answer it, then I'm in the case of having to find a new place, and I'll have to upload the episodes to there, which shouldn't take all that long, but it's still going to be a time-consuming and another process of probably spending money on it. So
right.
If, you know, say Podcast Garden gets back to me tomorrow with the fix, then Weekly Manga Recap's on iTunes tomorrow. If they don't, and I have to find a new place, Weekly Manga Recap will be in iTunes in the next few weeks, maybe January at the hopefully latest. But I'm honestly, I'm telling you guys, I am really trying to get this stuff on there very soon.
It's not Chris's fault.
I'm annoyed because there's other shit I want to be doing, but my focus has been get Weekly Manga Recap on iTunes. It's been one of my goals. So many people have been asking for stuff like that. We even got like an email just this week of someone saying, hey, do you have a place we can download episodes? And technically, yes, we do at the moment. If you go to podcastgarden.com/podcasts/weekly manga recap. The episodes, you should be able to download them from there, unless they fuck that up too. But right now, I can't get on iTunes until I get this shit fixed with the feed, and if not, go to a different website.
Also, that's Weekly Manga Recap, all one word.
Yes, Weekly Manga Recap, all one word. And
listen to everything.
All of it. It's why I found such a fascinating interest in seeing when was the point Weekly Manga Recap went from being diligently an hour long to suddenly being like an hour and 45 minutes to now it's just like, fuck it, 2.5 hours, who cares? But no, I am working on it soon. And just to give any sort of clarification to it for anyone who is curious, this will not change how the podcast is run in any way whatsoever. Episodes will still be recorded Wednesdays right here, same time. It'll still be uploaded onto Blip later that night, and then hopefully go on That Guy with the Glasses, aka what is now channelawesome.com, tomorrow. So it'll be up on that or channelawesome.com Thursday, and then very likely once I get into the regular schedule of putting things on iTunes, it'll probably be iTunes will then go up on Friday or something like that, or Thursday afternoon. So that's the plan. Nothing else will be changing. I just want to give this method out there for people who want to listen to their, you know, the podcast on the road and shit like that. A lot of people have wanted to listen, so I'm giving that option there, and hopefully it'll help kind of grow the show.
And of course, we've kind of wanted to put Weekly Manga Recap on iTunes for a while, but it's kind of hard to do that when you weren't planning on it, like, initially. Yeah. So slow going. I mean, we're not objecting to having a new platform for people to listen to us talk shit. So, yeah.
A method of getting actual advertising fucking shit on the show. No, it's something I've been wanting to do, and I'm working my ass off to try to get it done. It's just I keep running into hang-ups at the points where I'm like, I think I finally got it! Fuck! Like, I can't even get the first thought out. Like, I think I got... God damn it! Fuck!
Chris.
So, hopefully very soon, guys. And I had announced last week that we were going to have a contest for World Trigger Digital Manga, which, of course, I had planned to tie to the iTunes release. So, I've had to come up with a new contest for it. So, to sort of give clarification, right now we're recording on Wednesday the 10th. Wednesday the 17th is going to be a regular episode. The 24th would be the next Wednesday after that. I can't speak for Nick, but I won't be here. I'm going to be doing things Christmas Eve with family, so I won't be around for that. So what may happen is maybe that week we'll do something like Tuesday or Monday, but I believe since that's the week there won't be any jump, I was thinking what we could do was that Yu-Gi-Oh! Match we promised.
Mm-hmm.
And in honor of that, the contest to win all the copies, digital copies of World Trigger, you just send an email to weeklymangarecap.com posting your list of a built Yu-Gi-Oh! Deck that you are going to give to me to use to beat Nick. But here's the key to this. It must be a theme, and you must explain the theme as to how I can use it to create a wacky character to battle Nick ass. So it can't just be like, here's the most bullshit deck. You have to be like,
if someone gives you Dragon Rulers, I will call bullshit.
Someone has to send over, like, fucking, like, here you go, it's the fucking, the bulldozer deck, and you have to be a disgruntled construction worker. And I'm like, alright, I can do this.
I don't think that's possible with existing cards, but there was basically, like, someone in one of the anime that did that.
Now, I just want to know,
like,
for
some
people...
It's like a little kid who had, like, a construction deck.
I just want to know for the people who are like, well, I fucking don't know anything about Yu-Gi-Oh! I can't possibly do this. Don't worry. There's going to be other contests for World Trigger Manga that won't be related to that, but that's what we're doing for this week.
And I'm gonna, so, I swear I won't try and sabotage Chris. Like, hey, Chris, no, this one that says Queen Bird is the main use? Yeah, use that one.
You just messaged me like, you should build a Harpy deck.
You need to have a Shape Snatch deck, Chris.
At, like, schmick at notfakeemail.com. And I'm like, well, I like this schmick guy.
Also, we're going to have to figure out a program that we'll actually use in order to have the battle. But
I think Dueling Network, I heard, is a good one, and I'll stream that. And again, it won't be like a regular episode of Weekly Manga Recap, so if you're looking to see it live, it's going to be the best way, but I'll try to highlight it for people who won't, but I won't be putting it up as like an episode, because I can't imagine there's much value to listening to a fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! Game be played. But yeah, that'll be... I imagine I won't pick a winner until the day of the matches, I'm sure. But I'll send something out for those guys. And we'll probably do some like Q&A and shit like that during it or two.
Alright, cool.
But now, it is the eagerly awaited to sequel to the World Trigger, To My Heart, and Back Door. But I told you guys, I had a special surprise prepared for this. And all throughout this episode, you've been commenting, Nick, and people in the chat room have been commenting. I hope you don't do that voice while you're reading it. I hope you have that energy while you're reading it. Well, that's the thing, everybody.
Yeah, if you use that voice while you're doing the story, you're going to be as dead as Unohana is.
Nice pull.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be reading it. The twist is, Nick, you get to read my filthy fan fiction.
All right. You fucker. You can't warn me.
Nope. It's only worth it if I make it a surprise.
All right. Fucking Skype, this is impossible to read.
I can forward it to you by email if you want instead.
Let me just copy it down real quick. I'm seeing some certain things in here as it's scrolling past this. Copy. Notepad. Paste. Okay, actually, that looks pretty good. All right.
You have to read the title.
The World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door, Part IV.5, hashtag the sequel.
Alright, carry on.
Mikumo Osamu's throbbing meat was so deep inside of Kitora-eye's sloppy puss that he could tickle your uterus with the head. Damn, that was some satisfying, extensively filthy sex we just had, wasn't it, Kitora? Osamu said, unclenching his teeth from his lip and uncrossing his eyes from his orgasm. Shut up, nerd, Kitora quickly replied as she kicked herself and square in the chest to push him away. You know I hate it when you talk. I swear if there was a way for me to rip out your vocal cords and turn you into some weird erotic sex zombie, I would do so. And no, I don't know what that means either. Osamu frowned, his already meager self-esteem once again stomped into oblivion. Shyly, he watched Kitora slowly start to dress, upset that all of the sexual escapades were over. He reached over to massage her soft, white... Or would it not be white? Because Kitora is Asian, but anime girls always have, like, a really Caucasian skin tone. What's up with that? Skin. Don't touch me, Kitora replied as her super-fast reflexes caught his hand before it could make contact. The room filled with the sound of Osamu's skinny bones cracking in pain. Owsies, Osamu replied, realizing afterwards that owsies probably wouldn't help with his lacking masculinity. Still, to progress the story further, he needed to man up. Kitora... We have awesome, filthy sex together frequently, but you're always so cold afterwards. Which is weird, because your character doesn't have an ice gimmick or anything. Oh, holy shit. If you could have an ice sword, or maybe create blizzards with your trion so you could freeze neighbor cell and then decapitate them, that would be so pimp! Wait, what was I talking about? Alright, bae, why are you so cold? Osamu, I hate you like ISIS hates the Palestinians. Note, that was intended to be a topical reference, but I totally never read the news, so if that doesn't actually match up with real-life events, please substitute this much nerdy reference that is accurate. Like vaccine Digimon hate virus Digimon. Damn you, my new Smon! Kitora frowned as she finished putting on her socks, but nothing else, because it was always more erotic to talk while you're naked, except for socks. But I love you too. It's like I want to make love to you, but I want to snuggle you to death at the same time.
Strangle you to death at the same time, Nick.
It's like I want to make love to you, but I want to strangle you to death at the same time. Sorry. Osamu almost raised his hand to point out that that wasn't a problem, but he decided to keep his fetishes a secret. For now. I just wish there was a way for us to make love that didn't require me to be aware of your presence in another way except your fat, pink rod of ages being snugged tightly in my unholy grail, if you know what I mean. I like smite, Osamu replied, to which Kitora started to cry. All seemed lost for the two, when suddenly Osamu came up with a great plan. Wait a minute, Kitora. What about if there were other parties involved? What? Like a three-way? Better than the three-way. Much better. Stay there. And naked. I've got some phone calls to make. And with that, Osamu was gone like a flash. Well, not really. He runs like an 18-minute mile, and he had to stop to catch his breath 3 times before he made it to his cell phone on the nightstand. But calls he did make, and many at that. He dialed until his fingers were blistered and his voice was hoarse from begging. But finally, he was done, and he snuck back into bed with Kitora. All right, pretty lady. Get ready to have your socks knocked off. Ah, because that's all she's wearing. And he makes, Kitora rolled her eyes and punched Osamu in the shoulder. After 20 minutes, he had finished crying. After 20 minutes, he had finished crying so she could speak. So, you found a bunch of other World Trigger characters to bring in? Better, Osamu said with a sly smirk before motioning to the door. Come on in, everyone! Were they waiting outside?
Yeah. Where else would they be?
You know they were there! Were they just all waiting for him to stop crying?
Yes! He had to give them the signal!
Suddenly the door kicked in and a loud voice screamed, I'm Monkey D. Luffy, and I'm going to be King of the Pirates! And pussy!
I don't know, I just find it very amusing for Luffy to scream, I'm going to be King of Pirates and pussy.
And then behind him was Locke from Lost. He rolled in on his wheelchair, but as he entered the room, he started to walk, and everyone began to cry at how beautiful it was. Then Legion from Mass Effect showed up. Geth do not need to procreate through copulation, but I have been programmed with a new hydraulic penis, and I would like to try it out. Behind it was Jinx from League of Legends, firing machine guns wildly into the air without regard, and behind her was Zapdos. Then came Jason Vieira Paul of the New York Giants, Detective Fresno from The Wire, Davos Seaworth from A Song of Ice and Davos Seaworth from A Song of Ice and Fire, and the song One More Time by Daft Punk personified to a person who just had to be a chick, because otherwise this was really going to be a sausage party. Also, Anna Kendrick is there. And now we can have a real sexy party, Osamu declared, to which everyone responded with a hearty cheer, except for Zapdos, who used thunder and accidentally killed Detective Presbo. And then, yes, they did have a sick party. There was much sexual fornication to be found, on the bed and below, from the walls all the way to the top of the ceiling, thanks to Zapdos. Everyone came multiple times, in fact, because rumor has it that it is... Oh, everyone came multiple times, in fact, because rumor has it that is a barometer for how great sexual intercourse is.
So I've heard.
At the end of it, everyone was so worn out from the sex that they fell asleep on the floor, except for Kitora and Osamu, who cuddled together under the bedsheets. That was amazing, Osamu. It was like you weren't there, which never made me so aroused before. I think Locke blew his load on the back of my hair, Osamu complained as he felt the stiff points of hair. I just want to thank you. No one has ever done something so kind and erotic for me before. I know it may seem like I can't stand the sight of you, but the truth is, I can't live without you. You're my rock, and I'm going to need you around for at least another 300 to 400 chapters, okay? For you, anything. He kissed Kitora lightly on the cheek, and then he came everywhere. The end!
Question mark?
But wait! Suddenly the door to the room swings open, and a mysterious figure, veiled in the shadows, speaks.
Osamu, you no get me grandchildren when you spill your seed all over bedsheet!
It was Osamu's mom. She stared down at Osamu with cold eyes that seemed to slice through his meager confidence like diamond-edged katana through a stick of preheated butter.
You make whole family look bad. Let Mama Mukamu show you how it's done.
And with that... Locke suddenly woke up from his sex-induced slumber and began to have sex with Osamu's mom.
Oh, John Locke, you're so big. You have so much try-on. Perhaps you become staple character in series going forward.
Don't tell me what I can't do, Locke screamed.
What? I tell you what you can do, stupid white boy.
It was at that point that everyone realized that Osamu's mom was actually Furious Miggy in disguise. The end for reals! Question mark.
So stupid.
I think that some of the, like, less absurd parts of there are the parts I laughed at the most. 20 minutes later, he stopped crying. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed that.
The long-awaited sequel.
We run a classy show here on the Recap, and so if you enjoy that type of thing, please join us again. Thank you to everyone who joined us for the show. We record it live on twitch.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and now post to channelawesome.com. Sometimes we do need to change with the recording schedule, so be sure to follow us at RoloT, at YRuler of Time. Check out podcastgarden.com/podcast/weeklymongerrecap, all one word, weeklymongerrecap, in order to check out all the past episodes as well. Come to iTunes soon as well. And also, send criticism, questions, suggestions for future manga for us to read, like the one Chris will be naming, hopefully not in the Furious Mini voice, in the comment section, or email them to us, weeklymongerrecap@yahoo.com is the address. And special thanks to Steve Man, our Tark artist. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com and idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And the infamous Plant, who recently began doing visual editions of the podcast as well. So check those out on his YouTube channel.
Absolutely. Oh, boy. All right. Guys, I have another recommendation for this week. And in the spirit of this month, where we're giving back with things like Try to Get on iTunes and filthy fucking fan fictions like that that forced me to set this episode as mature only on fucking Blip, I'm taking an oft-requested series. This is a short one. This is one currently running, but one that a lot of people have been asking our thoughts on. So next week, for Weekly Manga Recap, we will be taking a look at Boku no Hero Academia.
Yay!